It's time for Firearm Friday, a podcast dedicated to bringing together the firearm industry and community. Now here's your host, from the great state of Texas, the tactical leprechaun himself, Chris Dover.
TGIF crew, and welcome to the show. I am Chris Dover, and today we're going to be talking with Yehuda Reamer, which many of you may recognize. He is the Pew Pew Jew, Second Amendment advocate, also a published author. But first, let's talk just for a minute about Ontario Knife Company. Now, OKC has been making premium quality knives since 1889. And over there on their website, they have a variety of cool blades, from cutlery sets for your kitchen to those hunting knives and much, much more. So check them out. That's OntarioKnife.com. All right, crew, we got Yehuda Reamer in the house with us. How are you today, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing great. So not too terribly far away from you. How's the weather up there in the Dallas area? Cold?
Freaking 24 degrees today.
Right.
I didn't sign up for that.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I don't know what kind of a temperature drop we had. I was in town all day yesterday. We were getting my youngest daughter, she's in college. She's essentially a senior in college, but helping her buy a car. And, kind of being out and around on those car lots and stuff during the day, definitely noticed the temperature drop throughout the day. It was insane. So,
yeah,
not typical for Texas.
No. Like I said, I clocked it this morning at 24 degrees, and I'm like, this is not cool.
Right, no. Yeah. Find some indoors and some heat quick.
Exactly.
So I'd like to start out, if you don't mind. Let's talk a little bit about your history and how you kind of got on the journey that you're on now with the Pew Pew Jew projects and Second Amendment advocacy and all that good stuff.
So I grew up in Los Angeles. And funny thing is, I grew up as a Jewish photographer in Los Angeles. So by default, you would think that I'd be as left-leaning as they come. But I'm 34 now, probably about 11 years ago, when Obama was running for the presidency for his first term, I started, I kind of took the country for granted. I didn't really care about anything. And I was like a young, dumb 22-year-old, 23-year-old. And what happened was is I started, a friend of mine calls me up. He's like, hey, man, let's go to the range. Now, I'd gone shooting a couple times, and I was not in any way anti-gun. I actually loved it. But I never realized that – I mean, I heard about the Second Amendment, but I never realized that there was actually something that allowed a civilian to carry firearms for defensive uses. Mm-hmm. So I went to the range with my buddy. I'm like, dude, where'd you get all these guns? And he's like, they're mine. I'm like, what do you mean they're yours? I thought the only people allowed to have firearms are cops, military, and bad guys. And one thing led to another, and I got my first gun, and then I got the gun fever.
Sure.
And I got my Glock 19 was my first gun, then very soon after was a Colt AR and a Benelli shotgun.
Okay, very nice. So you covered the gamut there.
Oh yeah, very quickly.
that's pretty much all anybody needs, basics anyway. You had them covered.
Exactly. And what got me on the path to all this was I was married, out of the house, two kids, but I still kept the fact that I had a gun from my parents, just because I didn't need that whole Jewish mother, Jewish parent guilt hanging over me.
Right.
One day, my younger brother let slip. He's like, hey, so when can I go shoot your Glock? In front of my parents. And, I mean, they went ballistic.
Wow.
I'm irresponsible. How can I own firearms with kids in the home? And going on and on and on. And for weeks, they just didn't let up. And I decided, I'm like, well, if I'm going to have firearms in the home, I obviously have to make sure that my kids are going to be safe. and I need to educate not only myself but my children.
Yes.
So I found, I did research, I found the NRA's Eddie Eagle program. Mm-hmm. The problem with the Eddie Eagle program, and it's not really a problem. I mean, what they concentrate on what to do if you find a gun somewhere it's not supposed to be.
Right.
And yeah. That's fantastic. But that's all they cover in terms of firearms education, firearm safety.
Right. Not really any familiarity with it.
Right. So, you know, they have a catchy tune, a catchy song, but, you know, there's so much more to firearm safety than stop, don't touch, run away, tell a grown-up.
Right. Yeah.
So I went to the next best resource where you can find anything in the world, Amazon, and I started looking for children's books on firearms education, and they have, you know, stuff for adults on how to teach your kids, but there was no book on the market, I realized, that was specifically geared towards children. Mm-hmm. It, you know, there was nothing that a child themselves can sit down and read. So I was like, you know what? I've always enjoyed creative writing. I'm going to write. And I did. I wrote my first book, Safety On, I'm sorry, just like I said, I'm exhausted. I wrote my first book, and I didn't know anyone in the industry. I just sent it to a few of my friends who were in law enforcement to, you know, make sure the book sounded intelligent and sounded like I knew what I was doing a little bit. Mm-hmm. And the book was very well received when it came out about 2 years ago.
Now, did you try it out on any kiddos before you published it?
Yeah, I mean, my kids loved it.
Okay.
Granted, my kids were, when I first started writing it, my daughter was like a year and a half, so I couldn't even really read it to her.
Right.
My son was about 3 and a half, and I would just read it to him, but as he got older, you know, he appreciated it more and more.
Sure, right.
But, you know, I did send it to some of my friends, see what they thought. And what's interesting is how I wrote the book. I wrote it through the eyes of a little boy who wants to be like his dad. So instead of an adult preaching to a child, you know, don't do this, don't do that, don't touch this, it's more of a, well, this is what my dad taught me. Mm-hmm. It's more of a peer-to-peer conversation between children rather than an adult, you know, educating.
Right, gotcha. And what I lost my train of thought now. As far as your son, when you got the book published, you said he was about 3 and a half or so. Had you already started the familiarization process and curbing that curiosity as far as firearms by that time?
Well, the interesting thing is I didn't get the book published till 2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
When I finished writing the book and actually got the manuscript edited and corrected, it was right after Sandy Hook.
Oh, okay.
So I was turned down by over 30 publishing companies, 30 literary agents. I mean, no one wanted to touch a book that was pro-gun and pro-child at all.
Right.
So my son, though, because I had the book finished and I did get it illustrated in order to help me try to sell it, my son has been reading it. I mean, he's 9 and a half now. He's been reading it for years. Mm-hmm. So he has no problem, you know, with the firearms education. And like I said, he was reading it way before the book even came out.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, to shift gears just for a little bit, I definitely want to come back to the books, and I know you have another one and several other projects, but I'd like to shift gears, kind of go back into your upbringing you were talking about, you know, with your family there, and I know you said that you're practicing Orthodox Jew, correct?
Yes.
And I'm ignorant when it comes to a lot of that stuff. I hear that all the time. I don't actually know what that means. Do you mind explaining that?
So, practicing Orthodox Jew, again, how do you explain it? I mean, think of it as a practicing Christian, someone who's a devout Christian and practicing their religion, almost, you know, the phrase a cafeteria Catholic.
Gotcha.
So, Orthodox Judaism is not that. It's we fall. I mean, again, no one's perfect. We all falter and fail, but to the most part, we follow the Old Testament, and we do stuff whether we agree with it or not, or whether we understand it or not, because that's what our religion says. So it's more, you know, we're devout Jews rather than, you know, picking and choosing.
Gotcha.
What part of the Bible we want to follow.
Gotcha. So it's almost the exact opposite of, you know, Christianity, in the sense of choosing your denomination in the way it fits your lifestyle, basically.
Yes and no. I mean, in a way, you know, there within Judaism, and when I say within Judaism, I'm talking about Orthodox Judaism. Mm-hmm. You know, you have different sects of Jews that kind of interpret the Bible slightly different, and might have some different customs.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, you know, it's not really you choose. You could, man. It gets really into semantics.
Right.
You could. There are ways to, you know, like I'm just a normal Orthodox Jew. But then you have, like, the Hasidim, you know, the ones that have, like, the big curls coming down the side of their heads.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I'm not that sect of Judaism, but for me to cross over and start doing that is not a problem.
Okay.
But there are different sects that I'm technically not allowed to join because the customs are, you know, you have, like, the Ashkenaz Jews, the Sephard Jews. Like, an Ashkenaz can't really join the Sephard. It gets really crazy and confusing if you're not familiar with all of it.
Right. No. I've got a small grasp. Got a little better understanding than I do now. And I figured it was going to be complex when I had asked that question. Now, being raised, I'm assuming were you raised Orthodox Jew, or was it something different?
Nope, I've been raised Orthodox my entire life.
Okay. Now, as far as kind of tailoring this and looking at the 2A aspect of things, I've got a curiosity when it comes to, you know, the Jewish demographic in the country. Do you have any kind of an idea where the pulse is as far as the 2A with that part of the community?
So it's interesting, and this is not going to be a blanket statement because I got yelled at a bunch of times.
Right.
Yeah, this is not a blanket statement. Reformed and conservative Jews tend to be more liberal.
Okay.
And that's where the blanket statement comes in. I'm not saying all of them. I know
sure.
a lot of
absolutely.
I know a lot of Reformed conservative Jews who are staunchly pro 2A. But in theory, a lot of them tend to be left-leaning. Mm-hmm. And in with that regard, they tend to be, you know, pro-gun control, that no one should have guns, or except only the police should have guns.
Gotcha.
Orthodox Jews tend to be more pro-Second Amendment, pro-2A, but a lot of them don't want to own firearms. They're okay with people owning them, and they understand the concept of the Second Amendment. They're just, we're not gun people, so we don't want to have anything to do with them. But
right.
If you want to have one, by all means, go ahead.
That's interesting, and that's great to hear.
Right.
I mean, we need more people like that, you know, say, hey, this is a right, and you know, you have a right to do it. I don't want to participate, but I will certainly help you defend your right to do that.
Right, exactly. And that's what I tell them. I mean, because I'm an Orthodox Jew working in the advocacy side of the business, which I actually might be the only Orthodox Jew working in the advocacy side of the Second Amendment business. I'm very vocal about Jewish gun ownership. I'm very vocal about, you know, Jews should be participating in firearms education, should be getting their permits, or if not getting their permits, at least owning a gun for self-defensive uses. So I'm very vocal about it. But I explained to them, look, as long as you don't try to take away our rights, we don't – if you choose not to be a gun owner, that's your prerogative. That's fine.
Sure.
So it's very interesting to hear the conversations that a lot of my Jewish friends have, just because some of them are rabidly anti-gun, and some of them are just like, no, man, we love it. We want to get involved. How do we get involved? Especially in the aftermath of Pittsburgh, you know, people are much more interested now.
Sure. Yeah. Well, something has affected them, I guess, on a personal level at that point, and they're making that personal decision to take their defense into their own hands.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that we talk about. I mean, not just me, but, you know, obviously within the firearms world, we talk about, you know, you're your own first line of defense. And when I tell people that, you know, the average response time of law enforcement, I believe last I saw was about like 9 to 11 minutes, mm-hmm. you know, across the country, I was like, well, what are you going to do for those 9 to 11 minutes if someone's in your house?
Right.
And when you tell them that, it's kind of like you see the wheels turning in their head. But there's that internal struggle of, do I want to risk bringing a firearm into the house with kids in the house and the possibility that accidents will happen? Or do I want to just say, hey, the probability of getting my house broken into is so small that, you know, we would rather not have it.
Right. Yeah.
So it's a very interesting balance that I see people within the Jewish community, you know, balancing.
Right.
But another interesting thing is, because let's say, you know, we have like our Sabbath, right, from Friday night to Saturday night. Mm-hmm. There is no driving. There is no TV. There is no phones, computers, movies, television, none of that. So it's a time when a lot of Jews get together and just hang out on, you know, Saturday afternoon, we'll walk to our friends' houses and let our kids play. And a lot of Jews don't, who are gun owners, don't talk about it because they don't want to be, we'll call it a pariah in the community. They don't want to be, well, we want our kids to have friends, and if we have guns in the home, then, you know, our kids won't have play dates.
Sure. That's understandable. And I think, you know, and I think all those issues that you explain, I think those extend to any race, culture, demographic that's out there. I don't think that that dynamic is, you know, specific to the Jewish population. You know, I think the white community as well as the black community and the Asian and whoever it might be has those, you know, liberal, you know, anti-gun, you know, pro-gun control elements that are going to be the same way, that, you know, they don't want, you know, their friends to be friends with the neighborhood gun guy, you know, his kiddos or whatever. So I think that's a fairly common thing.
Oh, no, 100% it is. And I actually just wrote a curriculum, one of the projects I'm working on this year, which I can't really discuss yet. I wrote a curriculum on educating parents in terms of living with guns in the home and different aspects of that. And one of the what I mean by I can't talk about it is I can talk about my curriculum, but I can't talk about why I wrote it yet.
Right. Gotcha.
But one of the things that I talk about is the media paints us to be incredibly, you know, old, fat, white guys with big ZZ Top beards and stockpiling ammo for the next revolution, rednecks, when nothing can be further from the truth. So when parents ask me, which I get asked a lot, they're like, well, we were asked, you know, do you, you know, we want our kids to come over, but do you own guns in the home? And you'd be surprised how many parents gun owners get very offended. And they're like, well, that's my right. How dare you ask that? It's, you know, you're infringing upon my rights. And I'm like,
right.
Hey, guys, first off, turn the crap down, because no one is infringing on your rights. They are asking a question because they want to ensure that their child will be safe. Mm-hmm. I said, you now have an opportunity to educate those parents, saying, yes, we actually do have firearms in the home. They are locked up securely. The only people allowed, or the only people that know the combination is safe, are my wife and I. Take the opportunity to educate, you know, people who might be a little more anti-gun than pro-gun. Mm-hmm. Because when you change the hearts and minds, that's how we save the Second Amendment.
Yeah, and I totally agree. I mean, on our side, we're real quick a lot of times, and I'm speaking in generalizations too, because that's unfortunately about the only way you can have that conversation.
Yeah.
But you know, I think we're really quick to, you know, as soon as somebody says anything that is seemingly an infringement or seemingly, you know, pro-gun control or anti-gun or anything like that, that we have a tendency to automatically want to get defensive and jump to the shall not be infringed, you know, statement. And when we do that, we shut down the conversation when, like you say, what we should be doing is taking that opportunity to go on the offensive and explain our position and educate that other party to the best of our ability.
Yeah, 100%. And that's something that I cover in my curriculum, that you need to take the opportunity to educate people who might be anti-gun, because you will be able to show them that, hey, we're not crazy. We're not these crazy gun owners who, you know, are shooting off rounds in the middle of the night into the sky. It's not who we are. We take this very seriously. We take this, you know, we have a responsibility to our kids, to our, you know, anyone else that comes into our house, and we want to ensure that everyone is safe. And that's the best way to do it, is by education.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I want to shift gears a little bit. I know that that you have spoken at the, and I misquoted it or whatever earlier in the pre-chat, but the get together every year, the Second Amendment, what is it, where the organizations get together? It escapes my mind right now.
The Gun Rights Policy
Conference. Gun Rights Policy Conference, yes. That's the GPC. GPRC. Gun Rights Policy Conference. I don't know why I have such a hard time remembering that. Sadly, I've never been to one. I do plan, I think it's, is it in Phoenix this year?
It is in Phoenix this year,
so
yes.
So that may be a trip that I may be able to make. And if so, I'm definitely looking forward to it. You've actually spoken at that a couple of years now?
Yeah. crazy story how I got into that. When my first book came out, I tried getting Alan Gottlieb, you know, the founder of the Second Amendment Foundation.
Right.
I was trying to get his endorsement for my book. Make a long story short, when the USCCA Expo came to Dallas, I went, he was there, I talked to him to get my endorsement, and he just turns to me, he's like, wow, this book is awesome. Do you want to speak at the GRPC? And I'm like, nice. Sure. And I'm like, what's the GRPC? And he goes, oh, it's the Gun Rights Policy Conference. I'm like, yeah, definitely. I'm more than happy to do it. How many people am I speaking in front of? You know, 50, 60? He's like, oh, about 350. And something people don't know about me is I have always been the behind-the-scenes guy. I've shunned the spotlight my entire life. And I absolutely hate the spotlight. But when my book came out, you know, you're kind of forced to do public appearances and podcasts, videocasts, TV. And when I spoke in September of 2017, it was the first time in 20 years that I publicly spoke.
Wow.
And it was in front of about 300 people.
Yeah.
And to say that I was nervous was a complete understatement. But luckily I opened my speech with a thank you to the one person who truly pushed me to get into Second Amendment advocacy. And it was such a great joke. I get up there and I'm like, oh, you know, I want to thank the one person, although he's not in attendance here today, the one person who really pushed me to getting into advocacy, to making sure that our Second Amendment rights don't go away. I said, with that said, I'd like to thank former President Barack Obama. And the whole place, I mean, 300 people just got up clapping, and that's how I opened my speech. And the minute I got that reaction, I'm like, you know, like, the weight of the world was lifted off my shoulders. It was
right.
It was great. But I spoke there, and then I spoke again last year at the GRPC. And also I spoke, I don't know if you're familiar with AmCon.
Yes, I am.
Okay, so I actually spoke at AmCon this past year as well. So I spoke Friday at AmCon, Sunday at GRPC, and it was great. AmCon, especially if you have a podcast, AmCon is really fantastic. Just if you're going to come into Phoenix for the GRPC, you got to do AmCon. It's totally worth it. It's worth coming in that extra day. You get so much out of it.
And, that's sort of the, you know, pre-policy for media.
Yes, it's the Alternative Mass Media Conference.
Right.
So it's for people in the industry who are public figures, who are podcasters, radio hosts, just social media influencers, depending. I'm not talking about, like, huge influencers. You know, even someone like me who doesn't have that big of a following yet. But, you know, stuff like that on how to monetize your podcast, how, you know, Mark Walters speaks every year and talks, gives fantastic tips on interviewing different people, guests on your show. And it's a fantastic day of, you know, really good information. This past year you had Cheryl Todd of Gun Freedom Radio. She spoke, mm-hmm. did a great job. Beth Alcazar spoke from, you know, the USCCA. Kevin Dixie spoke. Yours truly spoke on self-promotion. So it's been it's definitely worth it if you have a podcast or media in any way.
Gotcha. Would you say if you had podcast or media, it would be even more so? You would get even more so out of that than the conference itself.
Yeah, I mean, the conference itself is great. I really love it. You get fantastic information, but the conference itself is really, think of it as the SHOT Show of the advocacy world.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, although there's not that many booths set up, it's really just a great opportunity to hear speakers from around the country talking about what's going on in their home states and different things that are going to be upcoming in the year. Mm-hmm. So in terms of Second Amendment work, but it's two different things. But, you know, the Paul Lathrop and his wife Susan, they put on the AmCon, and it's fantastic.
Okay, now I've got an idea in my mind anyway about GPRC, about, you know, there's probably a lot of thinkers in there, right? It's, you know, the movers and the shakers, obviously, of the Second Amendment advocacy side of things, but probably a lot of great minds at that conference, I'm assuming, correct?
Yeah, I mean, besides Alan Gottlieb, you have, you know, Alan Guro was there last year. He was, for those that don't know, Alan Guro was the lawyer that argued in front of the Supreme Court in Heller versus, you know, the District of Columbia.
Right.
And obviously one, you have people like Maj Teray speak there. You had Rob Pincus. You had Oh God, I mean, I can't even. So many people. It's crazy.
Sure. Yeah, and that's several names that we pretty much see on a regular basis at, you know, a lot of the other industry stuff. So it's great to see. It's great to see more people. I hate to say more mainstream people, but, you know, not just these Second Amendment organization people getting together, but, you know, your trainers and your some of your industry people, and as well as your media people with, you know, that sort of thing coming together. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know. The GPRC, how long has it been going on? Do you know?
Let me see. Hold on. Here is my GRPC from Chicago. Oh, here we go. This past year was 33. This upcoming year is the 34th year.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. Yeah. I did not realize that it had been, wow, that's three decades. That's amazing that it's been around that long. And you know, still, I was, up until a couple of years ago, I wasn't familiar with it. I guess it was in, 2 years ago it was in Dallas, correct?
2 years ago it was in Dallas. This okay. past year was in Chicago. And this upcoming year, like we said, is in Phoenix.
Yeah, it was when it was in Dallas, I guess. That's fairly close to home. And of course, it came on my radar then. But up until then, it wasn't. So, you know, I've missed out for three decades. This has been going on. So I think it's important with things like this that we get the word out and talk about them. And, you know, more people can show up and maybe get involved and, more importantly, get inspired and get motivated, you know, to get in a fight. We've got a lot of people. There's a lot of apathy out there. And there always is. And I know there probably always will be to a certain extent. But if we can ever just get people into some of these rooms with some of these folks, yourself and like you were talking about, Pincus and Dixie and Gottlieb and those types, then if you can't get motivated by those folks, then you're what is the word? Unmotivatable, maybe? That's probably a Bushism, but we'll go with it. Unmotivatable.
No, but like you were saying, you know, if you can't get motivated by hearing some of these huge names speak, no, you really are just... there's so much more to the firearms industry than, you know, these competitive shooters and the latest and greatest in firearms technology.
Yes.
Absolutely. You know, I actually have it's a question I have, and I plan on writing an article about it. There's the competitive shooting world, right? Huge.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Where are the competitive shooters coming out in defense of the Second Amendment? And what I mean by that is, take, for example, the bump stock ban. Why was it banned? Because it's a modification. Now, it wasn't the Democrats that did this. It was the Republicans.
Yes. Square on their shoulders. Correct.
Exactly. What happens when, you know, Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein and Blumenthal and all these people come out and say, you know what? We are now going to try to ban Geissele triggers. Because why? It makes it a much smoother trigger pull, and now you can shoot faster.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The competitive shooters, their entire livelihood depends on firearms modification.
Exactly.
But you don't see them out on the front line saying, whoa, 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 no, 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 no. You can't modify this. This is crazy. This is... Do you know what I'm saying?
No, I mean, I absolutely agree. I mean, there are, and I think that's part of, that speaks to a lot of the division that is talked about within the firearm community or the firearm culture, that you've got a lot of people that, you know, whether it's quote-unquote FUD or, you know, it's the competitive side, or, you know, I see it even with the, sometimes on the instructor side, they take it entirely too tactical, you know, that, you know, they don't, you know, they could care less if somebody was to come after, let's say, a revolver, you know, or something like that. Maybe there was a new revolver that come out, or some type of an accessory or something, and they really wouldn't care about that because, you know, in their frame of reference in their little bubble, in their little world, it's all about semi-auto. They really don't care. And I think that's something that it was definitely a topic that I wanted to hit on with you, and I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, I think that what that's going to require, I think that inherently most people are not necessarily, they're not against that sort of stuff. They're just not vocal, like you said, about it. And
exactly.
And it requires that motivation. But what it's going to require, and I've been dealing with this with a lot of the viewers and followers I have out there, as well as even colleagues and stuff have talked to me, is the whole FUD thing. I grew up here, rural East Texas. I mean, I can't even remember the first time that I shot a firearm. I was that young, and you know, FUD is just a way of life. I mean, it's not around here. It's not necessarily a derogatory term, or at least it shouldn't be.
Right.
You know, we like to hunt. We like to do everything with them, and whether that's with a revolver. I love my revolvers as much as I do my shotguns, and as much as I do my ARs and other things, semi-automatic
right.
pistols. But I do still love my revolvers and my lever-action rifles and stuff like that. They're just as cool to me. So, in a way, am I sort of a FUD? Yeah, in a way, I'm kind of a FUD too, I guess, in a way. So, my point being, I think there's, instead of demonization from somebody that can't, I don't know if the word would be sympathize or empathize with those particular people, because you see it all the time. You see, like, the tactical guys or the real hardened self-defense guys that want to badmouth the hunters. Well, what we need is not that. We don't need any of that mess going on with the badmouthing and the name-calling. What we need is somebody within that hunting community to stand up and then motivate others within the hunting community. And we need to see that as well with the, I think, with the competition side of things. You've got Kevin Dixie and Maj, of course, knocking it out of the park with the inner city crew.
Yep.
You know, I think you're doing a good job, by all accounts, with, you know, the Jewish demographic and other stuff. So that's what we need. We need a bunch of different individuals, right, that can relate to those people that they need to in order to motivate them.
No, I agree 100%. And like I said, it's just, it's unfortunate that how much more power we could have if we had these professionals being vocal on the Second Amendment as well. I know I talked to one competitive shooter who's a very well-known shooter. I'm good friends with her. And she actually was convinced by a mutual friend to go to the GRPC this past year, and she turns to me at the end of it. She's like, wow, this is eye-opening. Like, I had no idea the extent of what was going on besides just my competitive shooting world.
Yep.
And it was so nice to see this, like I said, this huge name really floored by it. And I've talked to her about it, and she said, you know, unfortunately, people have that mindset of, well, they're not coming after my stuff, so I don't care.
Right. Yeah.
No competitive shooter is using a bump stock.
Well, or you make a good point. That, or they're just not, you know, they're just not paying attention. They're ignorant of the subject. You know,
right.
They go to work, you know, they spend time with their family, right? They watch a little bit of TV or something, and they pay their NRA dues or whatever it might be to protect their Second Amendment rights. They're not actually involved in paying attention. I think we've got a lot of that going on, and we've got to change that. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being a member of the GOA or the SAF or even the NRA or whatever, you know, pro Second Amendment rights organization you want to be a part of. But, you know, don't pay them to handle it for you. Pay them to do the big things, of course. Pay them to, you know, to help them, you know, fight things in court and stuff of that nature. But, you know, stay up to speed on it yourself. I mean, I think you have a responsibility as any firearm owner, regardless of what little niche or demographic you fall into. I think you have a responsibility to keep up with at least the majority, at least the major things that are going on involving the Second Amendment.
Right. No, 100%. 100%. Like I said, it would be nice to see a lot of the people in the competitive shooting world who get out there more and say, you know, this is crazy. We all know we can shoot faster and more accurately, or maybe not faster, but we can shoot a lot more accurately and more accurately because we're competitive shooters, is what we do for a living. And to ban something like a bump stock is ridiculous because it's not going to change anything.
Right. Yeah.
Getting it from not just people like you and me who, I write firearms educational books for kids, but getting it from people who are actually using firearms on a daily basis, who make those modifications on their firearms to actually support the Second Amendment. I'm not going to say support. That's a wrong word because I have no doubts that they all support the Second
Could
Amendment.
Promote maybe would be a better
right. Word. Maybe promote the defense of the Second Amendment.
Right. Right. Well, you know, and then too, when you're talking about specifically the competition sector of things, I think they've got a really good argument that they can use as well because, you know, you're not talking about. I mean, back in the 20s or 30s? I mean, football, they had leather helmets, right? Nobody's advocating that, these helmets now are, a few people actually are advocating this, that, these newfangled helmets are causing too many concussions or broken bones or sprains or injuries, so we need to go back to the leather helmets. Well, if you start going back to old school technology with sporting equipment, then records never get broken again because as the technology for that sporting equipment improves, those world records and other things just keep expanding, right? We see more and more awesome things within the sporting sectors of the country.
Right. Not exactly.
So let's jump on real quick here before we have to get out of here. Let's jump on to the other book. We talked a little bit about the Safety Owned, and that was your first book, correct?
Yes.
And then you've got another one as well.
Well, I actually converted Safety On to a coloring book so that you could, a child can read the book, the actual book, and then really immerse themselves into the story by visualizing it themselves and internalizing the messages on their own.
Ah, that could be beneficial. Right. That's a good idea.
Yeah, so I have that. And then my third book was The ABCs of Guns, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's an ABC book. So A is for ammunition and AR-15. B is for barrel and bipod. It's a fun book that I'm finding more adults liking it more than children.
Right.
But the reason why I wrote that one is it's important for children to understand the different pieces that make up firearms because, God forbid you find yourself in a situation where a child has his finger on the trigger.
Right.
You can yell at the kid, put the gun down, but kids a lot of times don't listen right away. But if you tell the kid before you put it down, take your finger off the trigger. Right. And the kid's like, well, what's the trigger? And all of a sudden they start looking at the gun.
Yes.
That, they need to be familiar, like, oh, my finger's on the trigger, shoot. Let's take it off. Then you can worry about putting it down.
Right.
So I thought it was important for children to understand the different parts that make up a firearm. But I did it in a very fun way that, parents are loving because A is not just for Apple. Mm-hmm.
Sure. And, it looks like, there's a lot of coffee table books out there. It looks like that could definitely be an interesting coffee table book to have out when people come over and, see that sitting around. But I guess the more important purpose of it, being directed toward the kids, is curbing that curiosity. I think that's the number one thing that when you're dealing with kids, I think that you have to do, especially if they're around firearms regularly, you've got to get rid of that curiosity factor in things. And having that ABC book that goes through and talks about different parts and different components, well, that gives them knowledge. I mean, they're able to see those things and know what they are, relate them to, whatever mom or dad has in the safe, or whatever mom and dad carry every day or whatever they take to the range. And they're able to relate that stuff. So it really helps curb that curiosity, which is the number one cause of issues, right? Kids get into night drawers, they're curious about the firearm, and then here we go.
Exactly. And that's why I wrote it.
So, yeah, I'm liking that one. As far as future projects, you got anything coming up
that you want to talk about? I actually have a new book coming out in, well, hopefully, you know, man planned, God laughs, but I have a new book coming out end of May, beginning of June. It's also a children's book, firearms related, and it's going to be pretty awesome because there's nothing like it on the market. So it's going to be pretty cool to get that book out just in time for July 4th. And then I have another three books that I plan on writing, maybe even four books.
Wow.
Over the next couple of years, just because it takes some time.
Sure.
One of them, I have a phone meeting actually on Sunday with somebody that someone who's really breaking down walls in the firearms community, and I'm hoping to, you know, we're going to discuss writing a book together because he was so into it, and it's just a matter of now getting the pieces in place and beginning to write it. And our goal is to have that done, being written by end of May, edited end of May, and then getting it into the illustration phase. And it would be nice to actually be able to release that and have a we'll call it a book release party at SHOT Show next year. So
that would be interesting.
Yeah, it would be pretty cool because I love this guy more than anything, and he's fantastic, and to be able to work with him on a project like this would be huge. So I know I'm talking very cryptically, but
you can't give away the farm.
Exactly. I can't do that, but no, I'm working on a bunch of things, you know. Just besides my whole Pew Pew Jew website and having over 50 shirts for sale on my website that are all fun pro-gun shirts, and my books, you know, I'm hopefully going to go on a speaking tour with another friend of mine sponsored by a huge company this year. So going to different places around the country doing, you know, a speaking tour, which would be totally awesome and a lot of fun. I have that project. I have a ton of stuff coming up, so...
Yeah, it sounds like everybody else. You've got a lot of irons in the fire, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. Right now, I'm probably working on, like, four projects at once. And I can't wait for... You know, I just can't wait. So I'm definitely releasing one book, like I said, in a few months from now. It's possible I'll be able to release a second book this year, that is more of a coffee table style book, mm-hmm. but it's really funny type of book. And yeah, I just, my hands are in so many pies right now. But it's great. I love it. I love being busy. I love being in this industry because, you know, people warned me when I first got in. They're like, "Oh, Beat, you got to be careful. You know, you're an Orthodox Jew. There's a bunch of, you know, redneck anti-Semites in the gun world." And I'm sure there are. But in the 2+ years that I've been in the firearms industry, I have not encountered any anti-Semitism at all. And I'm not surprised. I mean, you know, the way I see it and the way I've realized is if you're pro-gun, you're with us. If you're anti-gun, you're against us. It's that simple.
Yeah.
So they don't care where you come from. They don't care the color of your skin. They don't care about your religion. It's just you're pro-gun, you're with us. You're anti-gun, you're against us. And, I mean, it's just been a fantastic journey. And like I said, I have so many projects coming up that I can't wait to share with everyone.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, and I find it that, you know, if you're pro gun, then you're pro freedom. You know.
Right.
And if you're pro freedom, then I don't really care what religion you practice, you know. But on the same token, just like we talked about that some earlier, if I'm also, you know, a firearm owner and a gun guy, then I'm the type that I'm curious about that. I love the mechanics and the design and the function and all of that type of stuff when it comes to firearms too. So because I have that, like we talked about with kids, that curiosity, right, that intrigue with firearms and how they operate, I'm kind of the same way when I meet people, like with you. I mean, I was curious about the whole Orthodox Jewish thing, you know.
Right.
Not that I plan on converting or trying to do anything like that, but, hey, it broadens my knowledge, and knowledge is power, and that's a good thing.
100%.
So we're up against the clock here, Yehuda. I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah.
If you got any place people can reach you, what's the best way to reach out to you to find the books, all of that good stuff?
People can go to thepewpewjew.com. And pew is P-E-W-P-E-W, then Jew, J-E-W, and thepewpewjew.com.
Very, very catchy indeed. Did you come up with that, or did somebody else put that on you?
Someone put that on me. A friend of mine in the industry, we were talking one day, and he's like, man, I love what you're doing. You're like the pew pew chew. And I'm like, light bulb.
That's worth using. We'll run with that. And exactly. It's definitely catchy, and it works well. Well, I hope you have a great weekend. Again, Yehuda, thanks for coming on. We certainly do appreciate it. And hopefully we'll see you soon.
Yeah, sounds good. And anytime you want me to on, just give me a shout out. I'm more than happy to double up.
As you get the new books coming out, I'm sure that will happen.
Sounds good.
Thank you for joining in on another Firearm Friday. Don't forget to log on to clovertac.com. There you'll find our social media links, the blog, cool swag, and more. If you'd like to help support our projects and take advantage of some extra perks, you can do so over on Patreon at patreon.com/clovertac. Have a great weekend.